Welcome to Software Gone Wild, the podcast focused on everything software-defined. And today we have special guests that I've been chasing for almost a year, and they've solved one of the hottest problems in networking today, namely, how do you link Docker with networking in a sensible way? Before introducing them, I'd like to introduce my regular co-host these days, David G. David, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm great, thank you. Not bad. Looking forward to Christmas. I think this is the last one for us before Christmas, isn't it?
Yes. So, the last podcast recorded in 2015. It will be published next year probably, but who cares?
Awesome stuff. How are you doing? You well?
Oh, pretty good. I was climbing the whole day. It was sunny. It was warm. It was 17 really? Degrees Celsius, whatever that is in Fahrenheit. I had a wonderful day.
Sounds great. And all these, you know, all these tales of working, I think you're lying, aren't you?
Yeah.
Sounds bliss.
Yes. Okay. So let's move on. Our today's guests are from a company formerly known as Socketplane and now part of Docker, Brent Salisbury. Brent, how are you doing?
Hey, buddy. It's great to finally chat officially. Doing well. We're having some technical difficulties with Skype today, so hopefully we'll be joined by everybody. But it sounds like you're still active and climbing. And
yeah.
I think these days I measure my physical fitness if I can put on a sock while standing up and not falling over or breaking something. So I'm kind of jealous.
Well, you have to drop by Slovenia and I'll take you climbing. Don't worry.
It's a deal. I'll maybe get up the steps too, though. Into the parking lot.
And our second guest is Madhu, and I will not even try to pronounce your last name. Could you do that for me, please?
Hi, Ivan. My name is Madhu Venugopal. As Ivan said, I am part of Docker Networking, and it's Venugopal, and I know it's not my mistake. It's my parents' mistake for keeping such a name, right? So
No, don't worry about that. You wouldn't believe all the troubles Americans have with my last name.
Hey, you surprised me. Gee, people say Gi all the time. That's three letters.
Guys, in fact, I kept my first name to be like short five letter. Mine is 13 letter first name. I won't even try here. So
okay.
Yeah, sometimes I see his full name, I'm like, who's that? It's like, oh, that's my brother.
And we are still missing Dave Tucker because he is trying to log into Skype and Microsoft is giving him the sad face and a middle finger, I guess.
Yeah, and then there's one other that we're also missing who is on a plane to Seattle right now, which is John Willis.
True.
Both of them are on Twitter, though. I encourage you following them. Super smart guys and definitely changing the landscape.
Absolutely. You know what we could do, Brent? John will probably be at Interop, right?
Yes, sir. I believe he will be.
So I'll sit down with him at Interop and record another one.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there's, while we're kind of on the events thing, there's a DevOps Days for networking. So we did one, the first one last year. We're sorting out getting the next one in May out in the valley. So we'll be getting you more details. But
you definitely keep me posted because I'll be in US beginning of May. Run Interop and maybe an SDN workshop, and maybe it will just fit together.
Perfect. Sounds great. We'll get you more detail.
So, coming back to Docker networking, what are you guys doing at Docker these days?
Should I go first?
Sure.
Please, Madhu, come on. Madhu will be he's a humble guy, but he is the backbone of Docker networking, so lucky to have him on.
Well, let's see. Let me give some short history behind what we are doing now and why we are doing what we are doing now.
Perfect.
So that will give us a context behind, what's happening here. Rewind like 1.5 years back, August 2014. That's when Brent, myself, Dave, we are working on OpenDLS-based controller for OpenStack solution at Red Hat. We just released the Helium release on OpenDLite. And we were really looking at various other cool technologies that we can solve networking problems on. That's actually when, around July timeframe, we were looking at Docker to solve some of the CI issues that we faced running a continuous integration of our solution in OpenDLite. And immediately we got impressed with Docker as a technology, where they made it so simple to run applications on, you know, on any platform on the cloud. Being networking guys ourselves, we are looking at all the networking challenges and problems on Docker at the time. The solution that we saw initially was that Docker networking was simple, right? It was a single host solution with NATing and port mapping. And Docker as a platform itself was not trying to solve the multi-host problem. And there were other solutions out there who were trying to solve that with not doing the native solution for Docker networking.
Okay, so the baseline vanilla Docker like a year ago, if I understand correctly, was running numerous containers on one host, but effectively using single IP address per host and using NAT implemented with IP tables to forward an outside port to a container, right?
That's correct. So there's a reason for why it was designed that way. So let's look at Docker as a technology, where Docker is a container technology, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
So every Docker container, you can see it as a process. But folks do see container as a virtualization technology where they equate Docker container as a VM. So for those who look at Docker containers as a VM, they will consider this as a solution where, oh my God, why are we doing that, right? But for those who look at Docker container as a process and in a microservices architecture, in the early stage, like 1 year ago, the way people were trying to solve the problem in a CA environment is that there's an application. Let's split the application into multiple services, and each service is running as inside a container. And let's make the container talk to each other. So within a single host, right? So within a single host, we can use each container can be running in its own network namespace and attach the network namespace to via VEth to a Linux bridge and make them talk to each other without a need for NATing or port mapping or any of those. Only if there's a need for exposing that service external to that particular host, then we need the NATing and port mapping. That's absolutely correct. So in the, I'll call it legacy networking in Docker, which is 1 year ago, it was trying to solve the problem of, let's try to make an awesome product, which will actually make it work in a single host. And for multi-host, we let other players play a role in that, right? Like, for example, there were like wrapper products, like Weave was there out there at the time, where it was trying to provide a solution, wrapping Docker around and providing a kind of an overlay-based kind of solution around that time. So that was the, let's call it V0.5 networking in Docker 1 year ago, correct?
Okay, now before we move forward, for networking people who are not that familiar with Linux, namespace is like a VRF, right?
Okay, so Linux namespaces, there are six different namespaces already, right? We have now mode namespace, we have IPC namespace, we have network namespace, we have user namespace. So there are various namespaces.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I'm just thinking about networking. So yeah, it goes way beyond that. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, right. So yeah, network namespace is isolation. And should I call it a VRF? Well, I don't want to call it a VRF, but let's call it isolation at this point because people don't consider namespaces for multi-tenancy as such, as natively. So it's very difficult to call it VRF and then say it's not multi-tenant ready. So it'll be confusing for people.
Okay, understood.
Right.
And there are some overlapping properties, though. You can have these kind of very similar, if not overlapping, things separated in namespaces. And so that those kind of VRF concepts do apply in that sense. And then maybe we should back up a tiny bit more and just a super quick high level on Docker.
Okay.
Is we started with hardware virtualization 10, 15 years ago. So instead of having one application per bare metal server, so there was a lot of inefficiencies there, right? So the application sitting there running at 1%, so you have 99% of your compute and memory being unused or whatever. So it was a hard thing to say, I want to use 90% of my compute, 90% of my memory, etc. So we virtualize things. So now you have multiple operating systems, and inside of each of those operating systems are, you know, n number of apps running. So we got better at efficiencies. So now you can run toward 90, 95% of your resources. But the problem is there's still inefficiencies there. So there's still places to save money, essentially. So instead of running, 20 operating systems, with the concept of Docker, you can now replace those operating systems with more applications. So you wind up with this efficiency, this multiplier of instead of running, you know, 20 virtual machines on a bare metal, you can now, you know, run, let's say 100 or 100 plus, however many, depending on the profile of the application.
Okay, so to simplify the whole thing, if I want to run, let's say, one service per server, with traditional VM, I have to spend gigabytes on every server just for the Linux operating system. And with containers, they're all running on top of one Linux operating system, so there is no wastage of RAM or disk for Linux and associated stuff, right?
Exactly. So instead of loading floppy drivers, you know, from 1996 to run a web server, you just run the web server.
Perfect. So you guys were looking at that and you wanted to solve the whole problem. So how did you start? What did you do?
So the first thing it struck us as a networking guy is that, oh my God, the only way to access these services is through, as you said, single IP of the, you know, on the host and use port mapping and NATing to access the particular service from external application. So we started looking at the solutions at the time that's available to solve the problem, and there was actually none, right? So that's exactly when we started SocketBrain as a company. In fact, it was like within few days, we decided to just start the company, right? SocketBrain just born out of that particular need that we saw wide open in the market, which we can actually solve that. And being open source guys ourselves, we actually added a proposal to Docker, right from the first day of SocketBrain. We opened a proposal in Docker to make it native to Docker itself. Instead of providing a wrapper solution, make it native to Docker on how to provide multi-host networking and how to use various technologies that we have been learning for the past decade on solving this problem of multi-host networking for Docker containers. So that's how we started the whole effort. When we started it, we were playing with our own strengths. The SocketBrain strength was OVS. I mean, we have been using OVS for the past couple of years in Open Daylight, and we are also active contributors to the OpenVSwitch project, right? So we were trying to solve the problem by running OpenVSwitch on the edge. Edge is the host for us, not the top of the rack switch.
Mm-hmm.
So run OpenVSwitch on the edge, on the host, and instead of trying to do a centralized controller, let's do a distributed controller, because we saw various problems with centralized controller when we started solving the problem in the OpenStack kind of a solution. So we started working on a distributed control plane. We were running control plane on software as Docker containers on the host with using OVS as the forwarding plane. And we were experimenting with various control plane to exchange route information across the containers. We used even BGP as one of the control planes. We use Surf as one of the control planes, so on and so forth. We are experimenting with various technologies. But we were kind of using OVS as the forwarding plane with VXLAN tunnels to do overlay networking. And at the early stage, we were working with the top of the rack vendors to integrate with the device OVSDB-based offload, VXLAN offload, on top of the switch. So we were trying to do all the various pieces that we learned from the past. And we kind of quickly assembled together this solution with distributed control plane, OVS-based data plane, and did VXLAN-based solution, and integrated with Docker, and made it native to Docker, and made the multi-host solution work seamlessly across the cluster, across the data center or cluster, whether it is running inside a private data center or whether it is running in the public cloud. It really doesn't matter. We're able to connect these containers without the need for NATing or port mapping, and made the solution scale across multiple hosts, right?
Okay. Now, stepping back, and let's focus on the data plane first. So you're connecting every container to the OpenVSwitch, right?
That's correct.
And every container has its own IP address.
That's correct. In most cases, that's correct. But there are different modes in which a container can operate. So there are various patterns that is being followed these days where we can group a bunch of containers which actually are belong to the same service. But for example, right, if you want logging, in the traditional world, we used to integrate logging as into the application itself, right? But now we have the opportunity to run logging as a process, as a container, and make multiple containers share the same network namespace, meaning I can have a single IP assigned to a VEth pair and attach it to a network namespace and have multiple running containers share the exact same namespace, meaning the multiple containers can use the same IP address. That's one possible way to deploy things, which people use it today on various, for various deployment cases. But if you want to see from at a very simple use case, yes, we talk about one IP address per container. That's correct.
So the simplest from the networking perspective use case is one IP address per container, but you can hide multiple containers behind the same IP address, and then obviously you would have to use net rules and port mapping to get to individual containers from the outside, right?
When you say outside, we mean outside the cluster and not outside the host, right? That's the difference here.
I meant outside the host.
Yes, yes, outside the host, which is not part of the cluster. That's correct.
Cluster being Docker cluster.
Cluster being Docker cluster. That's correct. The way we have defined it now is that user can define a Docker cluster, and within the cluster, across the host, whether it is within the data center, across the data centers, whether it is across the multiple cloud providers, if you're able to provide a Docker cluster across the host, then containers can actually communicate with each other without the need for NATing or port mapping. But if a service have to be provided outside the cluster, then yes, we need to use NATing or port mapping to reach that service. That's correct.
Ah, even more complex. So you provide something which maps individual ports of an IP address to containers when you are accessing the containers from the outside, but within a Docker cluster, like behind the scenes, all these containers running probably in the same namespace can communicate directly, and I'm guessing that you're using VXLAN to get between them, right?
Yes, what is it mostly correct? So each container is actually running in its own network namespace. When we say cluster, what we really mean there is, let's take a swarm. There's a concept called a swarm in Docker, right?
Okay.
Swarm is the solution where you can actually, it's the orchestration solution for Docker, where you can have a bunch of Docker hosts. It's the servers. They can assemble them together, and you can install Docker engine on each one of the hosts, right? It's like the Docker engine is the Docker's core, the software that makes Docker work. And Docker Swarm is a software which makes these various hosts act as if they are like single gigantic machine, where users need not worry about where my container is going to run. Swarm will schedule these containers based on the resource availability. Instead of user has to saying launch this container on a given host, the user might just say that launch my service on this Swarm cluster, and the Swarm will take care of scheduling that container across any of the hosts where there's a resource available. And that's called a cluster. A cluster is where a set of multiple nodes, the hosts, put them together as if it's a single machine, and hiding the complexity behind how they are communicating to each other, how they talk to each other, how Swarm does the scheduling. These are all hidden behind the scenes. Networking is also a resource where we use to connect these hosts together. And hence, if I have an application which needs, say, 5 services to be run, the application need not be forced to run all the 5 services on a physical machine. Rather, they can launch the application at a Swarm level. Swarm will distribute these 5 services, which are, say, 5 containers, across the cluster in the Docker native multi-host solution. We use VXLAN as a way to communicate between these hosts seamlessly so that the containers can be launched on any of this host that is part of the cluster.
So these containers that are part of an application, let's say, have like a private network that you implement with VXLAN that they can use to communicate with each other.
Absolutely correct. Yes.
Okay. And then if you want to access them from the outside, you can either expose all IP addresses or you can use port mapping to use one IP address to access multiple containers.
That is correct. So that is the current native behavior of the Docker multi-host networking. Mm-hmm. Having said that, the primary work that we have been doing for the past 1 year is not just doing the way I suggested now, is also to provide the framework to let multiple players play here, right? For example, we have Cisco's Contiv project, and we have VMware's Open vSwitch and OVN project. We have startups like Weave working on it, Calico working on it, right? So we have made sure the developers who start using Docker for the first time make it simple for them to just make use of it on their whole, on their laptops or DigitalOcean or AWS, just make things work seamlessly, but also provide a way for operators to configure the Docker backend to use a different way to approach things, right? So the application written by developers doesn't change a bit. The application is provided the guarantees by the Docker platform that you write the application once, make sure that if you want a multi-host networking, you use the native multi-host solution and make sure the application works exactly the way the developer wants. But when you launch the same application on a production network, the operator can choose to use a different networking backend solution. For example, they might use a Vue plugin or an OVS plugin or an Open OVN plugin or a Contiv plugin based on the deployment they have. So in those plugins, they may not even have a need for doing a NATing and port mapping for exposing the service externally. They may provide a different way to provide access to these services from an external network, right? For example, I know that for some plugins, they just provide externally reachable IP addresses for the containers without the need for any NATing. And those containers can be reached. The containers are reachable from external services directly, right? So we provided that plugin mechanism in Docker so that multiple different solutions can actually play based on the deployment requirements.
Before moving forward, Dave Tucker got into Skype, so Microsoft allowed him to log in. So let's add him to the picture.
Excellent. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Dave.
Hi, Dave.
Hi.
Hey, finally.
Hey, you're welcome.
I know, right? Yay, Skype.
So, Dave, we are already on the Nerdfest part.
Fantastic.
Before moving forward, would you introduce yourself to the audience and what you're doing at Docker at this time?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Dave Tucker. I'm a product manager at Docker. I look after networking. It's great fun, you know, mainly herding cats, formerly of Socketplane. It's great to be here.
Brent, I don't think anyone called you a cat before.
Well, sometimes when they see me in person, it's like, wow, you look a lot different from your Twitter profile. I'm like, yeah, thanks.
I shaved my fur.
But Ivan, we call him our cat lady, so yeah.
Okay.
Yes, I am a crazy cat lady.
Okay, going back to Docker networking. Do I understand correctly that what you described is something like Neutron plug-in structure? And your default implementation is something like Neutron OVS plugin.
If you look at it from 50,000 feet, that look like that. But the implementation is like very different. The APIs are much more developer friendly and much more restrictive in the CNM. We call it CNM, which is the container network model.
And there's a property of Docker in the sense that it's fundamentally distributed also.
Okay, now that you mentioned distributed, it's a perfect lead in for the control plane discussion. So Madhu, you said that you run this distributed control plane with one container per host acting as the control plane for that host. So it looks to me like almost identical to what we've been doing with PE routers in MPLS VPN, for example, for decades. Or am I missing something?
Just a small correction there. When I said we are running a container for the control plane, I meant when we are doing socket plane, right?
Yes.
But after the acquisition of socket plane, we were doing that natively as part of the Docker itself now, right? So the control plane is running in the Docker engine. So we don't run a specific container for doing that. But Docker engine itself is a control plane that is performing this control plane operations for us, right? So minor difference, of course. And you are right. So when you run a control plane on the edge, that's exactly what you're doing now. That's correct.
So instead of running it in the container like you did before when you weren't part of the core team, now you moved that functionality into the core Docker engine.
Yes.
Okay. Now, how does the control plane work? Is it BGP? Is it something else? Is it using multi-protocol BGP for layer 3 VPNs? Is it eVPN? What is it?
Okay. So just to be very clear, the control plane that we have is very simple, right? We use SURF as our control plane. We're not using BGP yet. And in fact, Brent can talk a lot about eVPN because we are working on another plugin to use eVPN as our control plane for as one of the plugins that we have. But in the native implementation that we have, we use SURF. SURF is a gossip protocol implemented by a company called HashiCorp. It's a very application-centric way of doing gossip mechanism, essentially. It is eventually a consistent way to distribute states across a cluster. So with that mechanism, it scales way better and it's fast. So using that, they're able to exchange the route information across the cluster and now it's distributed states. One important aspect of Docker networking, which is different from what we used to see before in the traditional networking space, is that people call it various terminology, which I don't want to get in terminology, but just to make sure we all understand the same page, people use terms like micro SDN and micro segmentation for the mechanism that we are using now. Users can create networks. As Brent said, huge props for the OpenStack Neutron team where they let users create network at an application level centric view, not the way we treat networks in the physical world. It's a virtual network where people can create a network which is segmented for their purpose, intents and purpose, and applications can be run on top of those network, and it is very cheap in the sense that when an application wants a network, it can create a network and it can destroy a network at a very cheap way. And an application can be seen as very small set of participating services. Say, for example, it's very popular here that Docker has a project called a Compose project where developers can write a YAML file which represent like an application with 10 or 15 services running on that. And each, from a micro SDN, micro segmentation standpoint, an application gets its own network. When they launch a Compose file, it gets its own network. And that network can be that when Swarm deploys this application with various containers as part of the application, Swarm can actually launch these containers across the cluster and scale it up based on horizontal scaling. Scale it up, number of containers, you can scale it up. And these containers can be launched anywhere in the host, and a network is segmented for that. So when I say we use SURF as a control plane, SURF is exchanging routes just for this particular small network, essentially, right? So it uses gossip to distribute the states across the cluster, and its small states quickly synced up across the cluster. That's the default mechanism that we use today.
Okay, so SURF is, simplifying yet again, is a state distribution protocol or solution. Let's call it a state distribution solution.
Yes, it's a state distributed solution for the eventually consistent states. So we have some management states which are fully consistent. For those, we use KVStore, which is not the control plane as such. It's a management plane. But for the control plane, yes, we use SURF as a state distribution mechanism. Correct.
Okay, yeah, sorry, David, go on.
That's all right. I was just going to say that I think, Madhu, if we were just kind of digging a little deeper, what we're really saying is we're using the Surf, you know, the Gossip protocol, essentially in the same way that OpenStack would have used L2 POP. So we're essentially advertising, you know, things like MAC addresses when new containers come up using Surf. And then for the strongly consistent things like VXLAN IDs and that kind of stuff, that's all handled by the KV store, right?
Absolutely, yes. And to give a comparison of what we used to do in OpenDaylight, we had a centralized controller, and hence we didn't have a protocol or distributed mechanism for us to distribute states. The central controller was pushing the states on, as Dave mentioned, L2 POP, right? The controller was pushing the states on the distributed host, and hence we're able to reach end to end. And that is, since we don't use a centralized control plane, we use Surf as a mechanism to distribute states. Absolutely, yes.
And I'll take it one step further for my NetOps brethren. It is, you can basically think of eventually consistent, which is, you know, the same underpinnings of, let's say, BGP. So there's a prefix. A prefix shows up on an endpoint, whether it's a host route or whether it's a new Docker network that's a /24, for example. That gets updated eventually to all of the endpoints. And then we have where you need a lock for something like DHCP, where, you know, two containers can't get the exact same IP at the same time. So there has to be a locking mechanism to a little database. So that's where the KV store comes in.
Okay, so if I spin up a new application, obviously I need a DHCP server somewhere, and that's in the key value store. And I need to have one or more networks, so I need VXLAN IDs, and that's in the key value store. And particularly the VXLAN IDs are what we would traditionally handle on the management plane, configuring something, right?
Absolutely, yes. So in fact, you got the exact two reasons why we use KV store today.
Yeah. And then you get into the traditional problem of overlay virtual networking. How do I map the remote IP address and the remote MAC address into VXLAN ID and the next hop, which is the remote host? And what you're doing with Surf is more or less identical to what other people are doing with EVPN.
Absolutely, yes.
So instead of using BGP as an eventually consistent distributed database, you're using Surf as an eventually consistent distributed database.
Correct.
Ah, and I thought you were using BGP. Come on. just joking.
Well, we had that discussion. I think, yeah. Brent and I were, you know, way back when we really wanted to kind of do this with BGP. We were looking at some crazy stuff, right, Brent? We were looking at some bleeding edge RFCs. What, can you remember one of the ones that we were looking at, which is good fun?
Oh, yeah, there was one that I was in love with. It's, what was it? Where TLVs and BGP by, and actually it's a guy, I think it's a guy at Facebook. I think I first heard about him through you. Did a lot of BGP work at Microsoft and he went.
Peter.
Yeah, yeah. So
that's what Peter is working on.
Yeah, so I think that's a really cool thing where you can just do TLVs, because if we think about it, you know, header exchange is essentially here's, you know, and we even had some conversations with you about it. And I think your point was OSPF is garbage in, garbage out. And
yes.
Don't ruin my beautiful protocol of BGP. So it's pretty awesome.
So, Ivan, just to be clear, right? I mean, we all are BGP nuts here. We all love
hey,
BGP.
I was joking.
it really hits on the reason that the first direction of this first drive, you know, this first kind of multi-host plugin is it's developer centric, because it needs to be able to work from a developer's laptop all the way to a production instance in AWS.
But let's be honest. What you really need from the functional standpoint is an eventually consistent state synchronization mechanism.
Exactly.
Right. And there are better solutions for that in controlled environment than BGP. BGP is great when you need policy control, when you have people who don't trust each other and so on and so on, but to use it as a distributed data store, well, there are better solutions.
You nailed it right on the head there. So in fact, you're absolutely right. The way we have designed so far is that once you have this Surf mechanism, it's purely within the Docker cluster, right? But the moment you want to extend the cluster beyond the control of the Docker cluster itself, we absolutely need a mechanism like BGP so that we can talk in a trusted way with a cluster that is not managed by Docker cluster, right? So absolutely, we are going towards that, and absolutely there are plugins being worked on that. But the time to market and the problem statement that we had is solving the problem really brilliantly. So we just use that.
So what your approach is we have this plug-in architecture, and anyone can plug into this and provide whatever functionality they want, as long as they connect to the central distributed state where they can learn where individual MAC or IP addresses are.
There's a subtle difference there too. The plugins are not required to make use of the central states because of the way we have implemented the APIs. In the APIs, we do inform the information to the plugins. So plugins can actually choose to use any control plane as well. We are not forcing the control plane on them. So they can choose to use any control plane that they may want to use.
So you are passing the information to the plugins, and whatever they do is their decision.
Exactly.
And kind of at the heart of where we saw Docker networking early on is there is no single, you know, network architecture. There needs to be options. It's just natural that, you know, networking isn't anywhere near consolidating around one approach. So the plugins make it super easy because if a Docker network create happens on an endpoint, the plugin gets a callback and says, hey, there's a create event, and it can do whatever it wants. It could ignore the message. It could inject that prefix into BGP. It could set up .1Q trunks. It could set up IP VLAN, Mac VLAN ports. So it's super flexible from that standpoint.
Mm-hmm. The real trick about it is that the application doesn't need to know. As far as the people using Docker are concerned, nothing changes for them. They still use the same commands to create networks. They still use the same commands to create containers. So you can kind of have that beautiful environment where I kind of model up my application. I can run it on my local laptop. I can then use the same configuration to go and deploy into staging or production. But the difference being that in production, maybe somebody's using a plugin that's using some other control plane. Maybe they're using an OpenContrail control plane for production networking because that's what they want to do. Fine. Like the developer sees no difference. And that's, I think, a really cool selling point for Docker.
And from a technical standpoint, right, the most important difference that we need to understand in the Docker networking space is that the Docker network is actually made of three parts, right? The first part is the user interface that Dave mentioned. The user interface is absolutely managed and controlled by the Docker native platform, where the user interface is exactly the same regardless of what plugin that is being used, right? That's the basic, one of the most important selling point or the most important philosophy of Docker. Second important aspect is the namespace, the network namespace management inside the container, where whatever the container sees, meaning the IP address that is assigned into the vth pair of the inside the container, or maybe route information being injected into the container, or IP table rules injected into the container, that is completely managed and controlled by the Docker platform, where the plugins can provide information, but it is managed and controlled by the Docker platform to provide the consistent view for the applications. But the control plane and the data plane is completely handled and managed by the plugins. So that's the separation of concerns that we have. That's three different layers. A separation of concern is very clear. So since the APIs are very clear and who manages what layer of the mechanism, it's very simple to implement a plugin without having to worry about what is the control point, where it stops, where it hands over. It's all very clear.
Okay. All right, so that's all fairly interesting. So I'm just going to wind this right back to an operator's standpoint. So if we're going to take, say, make a mental model of three hosts, and we're going to run Docker on those three hosts, and then from a physical connectivity point of view, to keep things simple, we have a single top of rack switch. We run an Ethernet cable down to each of those hosts, and then let's say we create a swarm and deploy an application. Now, from an architectural point of view on each host, and appreciate, you know, there is no single way or model of doing this, but from an operator standpoint, does the Ethernet interface connect into an OVS instance as a point of handoff, as a number one, And then beyond that, then the VMs, the container properties are propagated by Surf internally. I'm just trying to make the linkage between external connectivity inbound to the hosts, and then obviously like back end where the properties are, you know, kind of shared between the hosts via Surf. If any of that makes sense, I guess I'm babbling at this point. I'm just trying to figure it out from a real world stance.
That makes perfect sense. But do you want to take this one?
I will start. You can jump in, of course.
All right.
Because I think there's the clarity required here. When we started with Socket Plane, we did OBS, of course. But in the current implementation in Docker, we don't even use OBS as the requirement. We use the Linux Bridge. So as of kernel 3.9, I think, Linux Bridge started supporting VXLAN interface as well. So we're using that. That's one small clarification, just to make sure of that, begin with. Right. So yes, as an operator, we have three servers and you connect to the switch, and you can have, again, it depends on the plugin itself, because the question that you asked is an operator specific requirement of how I connect this interface to the switch, right? To the OVS switch. That's absolutely.
Yeah. To clarify, if we could say this is before we put any plugins in, so as a bare bones basic starting point.
Yep.
As a hello world almost of Socket Plane.
Yeah, if we make it simple and we say, you know, you've just deployed Docker, you've just deployed a swarm, and you're using our built-in multi-host network plugin, essentially the IP address that sits on each of those hosts is never touched by Docker. The bridge that's actually created is hidden behind some network namespaces. So if you create a network, you go and deploy, let's say it gets 172.17.0/24. This is your new network where your containers are being run. All of that actually happens, you know, behind the scenes. If you want to get from outside, so from your operator network into those containers, you have to expose a port. So let's say it's a web application, you'll expose port 80. And the way that you will get in will be via NAT.
Yeah. Okay. That's kind of like how we do today, really, isn't it? We just kind of map ports across.
Yeah, which, you know, has drawbacks, and we're completely aware of that. Again, comes down to Brent's comment about, you know, one size doesn't fit all. Docker networking has worked this way for a very long time, and it seems to work, and people are using it, and that's great, but we'd love to eliminate that NAT overhead, which is why, you know, Brent and Madhu and I have kind of been working on Skunkworks plugins for things like IPVLAN, where we can actually get rid of that requirement for NAT, which would be very nice indeed.
Yeah, sure.
And there's always trade-offs to it too, right? Because now when you start saying, well, I want to get rid of the overlay, you now kind of limit your mobility between clouds, let's say. So again, it's, you know, if it's an enterprise approach and you just want to say, I just want that one key trunks running into a server and all my services are managed elsewhere or in a north-south type of model, that's just as easily done with the Skunkworks plugins that we've been kind of hacking around on. So,
sure. I mean, I've just, you know, kind of made pages of notes and doodles on here while we've been going through this. And I think for anybody like me who might listen to this going along in a car as well, I mean, we've danced between kind of traditional Docker networking, the kind of almost like the 1,000-foot high neutron point of view with the plugins. And I think I was just trying to get a bit of a handle on, you know, in terms of a series of steps, you know, we might go the traditional, then we might expand on that by turning on some features or going to, you know, a distributed, or almost you could view it as a distributed switch really across multiple hosts, you know, with information, you know, shared by the control plane via Surf between those. And then the next step is, well, how would you handle ingress and egress per host? You know, would you do it like with a network node in one design, or could you just, you know, just expose IPs from the containers directly on each machine if you're going to have a separate, you know, VEth pair and so on and so forth? I guess it's there's a million and one ways of looking at this stuff.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. And that's something that I think we're looking at upper layers to try and solve that problem. So having something like a network node for ingress and egress for all traffic to a network is okay, but we can end up very easily bottlenecking, which really isn't ideal. So at the moment, the way that we handle this is wherever the container happens to lie in the cluster, and where you bind that port to say that you want to, you essentially want to access port 80 in this container, it will be mapped to the host that it's on at the moment, so the IP address on its Ethernet interface. So what would be really great is we're actually starting to look at something like service discovery, whereby rather than having to hard code IP addresses and say, well, everything comes through the network node, that we can actually have either use a DNS kind of API or HTTP API to be able to push a query in and say, hey, I'm looking for this specific application. Can you please tell me which node it's behind and what port number it's using today, please?
Yeah, I was just about to kind of actually go there. So even if you know, kind of high level for those who know console, you might be able to do something along those lines or take that as a model where things register against some kind of a registry and then you query the registry. It's all very interesting. Then obviously we've got the problems of kind of optimizing beyond the constraint. I mean, some people, if they've got a microservice with, you know, three services, or let's say three services, microservices running a service, you know, running a network node might be okay. You know, maybe if your service doesn't consist of 1,000 different microservices, then bottlenecks might not exist, and it's a lot of complexity. But again, I'm just spitballing here. It's all interesting stuff, though. It's just there's so many moving parts to it. I was just trying to get a bit of a handle. So thanks for the explanation, guys. That's really helped.
Yeah, and I think for a lot of the operators out there, starting to think about where they fit into this kind of paradigm, right? We started seeing it with OpenStack. Instead of a firewall rule being requested through a ticket, change control ticket that comes to you, and once a week those get executed, you know, that's where the network is in the way as much as anywhere else, you know, in speeds and feeds. It's kind of this management piece. So thinking about services aren't going to be instantiated for the most part from the network operator. It's going to be instantiated from either the developer or the systems administrator, from the orchestration component. So, you know, I think packet forwarding and where prefixes live, that's still kind of is going to be a blend, right? Because if it needs to talk to the regular network, there may need to be some orchestration that's happening with the underlying components. So I do think there's a lot of value in understanding that, you know, what the paradigm looks like. And then the third would be kind of how do we manage these? And really, like, one thing that's we'll start seeing fairly soon is Docker running on actual physical switches. So I think there's a ton of value for operators to just start thinking about how, you know, the value of being able to run any Linux command or, you know, on all of your switches. So I don't have to maintain an operating system. I don't have to, you know, worry about any care and feeding on something. I can go run iperf on my, you know, on a network node, for example, and check connectivity from one network node to another network node.
That's really interesting. That could be awesome.
But you already have that on. Well, you could have that on Cumulus and Arista today, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's where you get into, you're relying on those dependencies to be satisfied by this underlying operating system. And I would also make the case, so there's a concept of this immutability. So do I really want to be in my network operating system, making changes, running, scheduling jobs to run, you know, et cetera? While often it is jailed off, when I hand that over from an operational standpoint, the operating system starts to mutate into something other than a vanilla. You know, if you think about microservices, they're a beautiful thing for crappy programmers like myself, because every time I drive to the store, I get a new car and push the old car off the cliff. So I destroy the process. I don't care about the end state after a workload's run. So if I'm running iperf from one switch to another, well, I don't care. As long as it runs and I get the value back, I don't have to maintain a daemon there. I just destroy that container. And when the next workload comes through, I spin up a new one.
Interesting. I'm kind of stuck on the whole operators point here. So with so much kind of thought and effort going into the networking side for Docker and the kind of container model, are you and is Docker going to help the community really with, and I hate to say this, but kind of blueprints and references? So even if you take our rudimental model of one switch and three hosts and you start adding in all the various moving parts, that soon can become quite complex. But if you take, for instance, two pairs of switches with four hosts and cross connect them all, and then you start doing weird things with bridges and doing VXLANs between them, you know, I think there's a lot of people going to get into a lot of hot water very, very quickly. And with these networking projects, I think especially these where they draw in quite a lot of attention, any kind of sensible guides and guidelines, I think from day one, is only just going to help adoption, isn't it? It's going to help that, you know, that kind of big push for people to play with it and feel safe.
Yeah, we're totally trying to figure out our documentation at the moment. and to kind of go a step beyond that, not only provide good documentation that pretty much anybody can access and say, okay, right, how do I set this stuff up? But we kind of want to go the next level deeper as well and provide some decent reference architectures. So yeah, if anybody's struggling with this in the interim or really wants to kick the tires on this today, I'm available on Twitter and we should really have a chat because I'd be really interested in your experiences with that.
Awesome.
Which brings me to one of the regular questions. How can I start playing with this stuff?
Well, there is a repository on GitHub, which is github.com/dave-tucker/docker-network-demos. And inside of there, you'll find nice little scripts that can be run. So you head to docker.com, download the Docker toolbox that will install all the various moving pieces to be able to get these demos up and running. You then run a little script that will set up multi-host networking for you. So that will give you 3 nodes. You can start playing around with it. If you want to go a little steps further, there's also scripts in there for setting up swarm and multi-host networking. So you can essentially run the script, and then you have an environment ready for you to start to play with.
And the next thing you'll tell me is that these 3 hosts are actually Linux virtual machines on my virtual box, right?
Indeed they are, Ivan.
And I can start all this with a Vagrant command, huh?
Yes. So the thing is, there's a project called LibNetwork where we have both Vagrant and Docker machine. Being Docker, we have Docker machines is much more simpler, of course, right? But we also have Vagrant machines which you can actually start using that as well, yes.
And we'll get you links for maybe the show notes, Ivan.
Oh, absolutely.
Because there's also like a docs.docker.com/swarm/networking with an example there also. So we'll get you some good references for the show notes.
No, but I love the idea of having pre-canned demos that I can just install and start exploring. So Dave, thanks a million.
That's really powerful.
Yeah, we've got some great applications for you to deploy on top of that as well. So I'll follow these up in the show notes. We have one that we demoed at DockerCon, which is a voting application that was purposely written in as many different languages as possible, just purely to kind of model the state of enterprise IT, whereby, you know, somebody starts doing something in one language and then eventually the language stack changes over time. So we have that available and running in a multi-host environment. And if you really want to go bleeding edge, I've actually got a multi-host distributed Minecraft server, whereby you can kind of jump from a central lobby into different realms.
Awesome.
Yeah.
My kid needs that. Awesome. got me there.
If you do anything with Docker, please just set up a giant Minecraft realm, because it's really good for that.
Awesome.
We just found the killer app.
Yes.
Yep. The killer app for SDN. People have been looking for ages, and here it is. It's Minecraft.
It just goes to show how old we are, guys. I mean, I'm just saying. So, I saw somebody tweet the other day. They're like, "Here's my kid's Docker tutorial." I'm like, "Really?"
Yeah. Now imagine my 9-year-old explaining at school how he's running Minecraft on a Docker swarm
across 3 different clouds.
Yeah, he's getting sent home.
And most importantly, they're using Raspberry Pi, because that's what is the cool thing now, where people use Raspberry Pi and connect them together. It's pretty awesome, actually.
Yeah. So not to take it a step further, but you can actually use Minecraft as a client for Docker as well. So that's another one of the projects that I'm involved in at Docker. So you can connect up to Minecraft and you get a nice visualization of all your containers. You can jump inside them, make them explode. It's really great.
It's classic. The giant switch to turn it on and off and everything. It's amazing.
That's awesome. All you need is what do they call it?
Like all you need is the Oculus Rift.
All that.
Yeah. So that's on the roadmap. Yeah, I expect support to come in the next 6 months. But don't quote me on that.
Is this awesome?
Okay, coming back to adult world. Are people using this in production? Not the Minecraft server. Docker networking.
Do I qualify as production?
So Swarm 1.0 is the multi-host solution for Docker, of course, right? Where it's a clustering solution, and Swarm 1.2 went production in the previous release, which is a couple of months back. Maybe last month, right, Dave?
Oh, DockerCon, just before DockerCon. So
that's great. Yeah. It's been a month now, right? Yes. So Swarm has been in beta for a long time, and people have been trying it for a long time, and it's been under production use, and now it's actually a production-ready solution, and multi-host networking is natively part of Swarm. And the answer is yes.
So there are people running what we've been discussing today in production.
Those who are using Swarm, yes, the answer is yes. Okay. And Dave will be the best person to answer the solution.
Dance around the question. Well, we released this a month ago, effectively, and so far I haven't had anybody come up to me and say, oh, yeah, this is great. We're using this in production today. So if there are people using it in production, they're very quiet about it. So far, I think, we're at that phase where this is very new. And I think people it's kind of like the .0 release of Cisco IOS historically. The first people to jump on board, they're going to wait and let it settle for a while and let people kick the tires on it before they start using it in anger. So we're really at the tire-kicking phase now.
And probably just as importantly to point out is the lib network itself, the pluggability is being used, everywhere. All the hyperscale providers are typically rolling their own plugins to fit into their environments, So...
Speaking about plugins, you already mentioned the Contrail plugin a while ago. Mm. Who else has provided publicly available plugin that I could use with your architecture?
So if you go to the Docker documentation site, there's a plugin page, and so it's got a good long list. I don't want to list them all because I'm going to wind up leaving one off.
It's not an exhaustive list. The ones that I know about and are top of my mind, and I will apologize in advance for leaving anybody out, obviously Contrail, and a big shout out to Michael Henkel for putting that together. He's an ex-colleague of mine. I haven't used it yet, but it does look incredible. The other ones we know of are Weave. Weave have a plugin, Project Calico, which is very cool, BGP-based. Mm-hmm. There is also VMware and the Oven plugin that we've kind of talked about a little bit today. Who am I missing?
And we also have Contiv from Cisco.
Oh, Contiv. Yep, that's it. Thank you. Thanks, Madhu.
Yep.
Aside from those, we also have the ones that Brian and I have been working on, which are Mac VLAN, IP VLAN, and Open vSwitch. So there are plenty of plugins out there. And I think, Madhu, you're going to mention a couple of others?
Yes, so these are the plugins that the vendor community has developed for their solutions, of course. But we know there are a lot of plugins being developed by the end customers for their deployment needs, essentially. So we know a bunch of them, which is not out there in open, so I'm not too sure whether I can express it here. But definitely, if you come to the Docker Network channel, the IRC, you'll see a lot of people talking about the plugins and how they're using it out there.
Perfect. Now, to wrap this up, if people want to know more about Docker networking, where should they start?
There are many places, of course. So those who are really geeky, they want to go deeper into the Docker networking implementation and talk to developers like me and Jenna, who's the lead developer here, and Alessandro, then they can come to Docker-Network IRC channel, where we are always there, answer any questions they have. And of course, we are all part of Twitter now, right? So thanks to Brent, I'm also part of Twitter now. So you can reach any of us in Twitter and we'll be ready to answer the questions there.
Then the more official channels, obviously, being docker.com, where we have some reasonable documentation on how to get started with Docker, and more specifically, how to get started with Docker networking.
Yeah, and my experience is typically from most of networking, it makes more sense kind of to start with go do it. Do the hello worlds of Docker. So like training.docker.com is a really good place to start. There's a great Plurisoft Docker, a couple of really good Plurisofts by,
Nigel? Totally,
Nigel, thank you, who's an awesome guy. And he's British, so it's fun to listen to. So.
Then now that you mentioned the Twitter handles, how can people reach you on Twitter? Let's start with the last one to join, Dave. How can people reach you?
Not by Skype, but by Twitter, at Dave_Tucker.
Blog, anything else?
dtucker.co.uk, where I occasionally blog. Or if you want to bother me by email, which you can do, it's dt@docker.com.
Thank you. Madhu?
My full name is Madhu Venugopal at Twitter. And of course, you can mention it in the podcast. People are not going to type it there, so search for it. You'll find it there.
I'll put it in the show notes.
Thank you.
Yeah. And Brent?
So I am on Twitter with Network Static, and I blog at networkstatic.net. And over the holidays, I'm going to try and get some new blogs out.
Yeah, you've been quiet for a while.
I know. We're all in hibernation.
So thank you all for this wonderful chat. And whenever you have something new rolling out, let me know. And I hope that we'll be able to schedule the next podcast in less than another year.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, and just a thanks to what you guys do. You know, I mean, I'm from Kentucky.
Don't worry.
I just want to say, it's, you know, you've been an inspiration to a lot of us out there over the years. So, you know, it's obviously been a real honor and chatting with you on this and, you know, having you be an inspiration to a lot of us in networking over the years. So thanks to you guys.
Oh, don't overdo it, please.
Oh, stop.
He's definitely not overdoing it. It's definitely true that when we always look up your blogs all the time, and now we subscribe to your videos. We don't miss any of them. So you are a huge inspiration for us, and, you know, thanks a lot for that.
Yep. It was very often early stage in Socket Plane, we'd be looking through something and we'd ask, what would Ivan do?
Yeah. Or more importantly, what would Ivan say?
Oh my God, yeah.
Okay, let's stop it right there. David, where can people find you? And I know you blog occasionally, but haven't for a while, right?
Oh, yeah, I haven't for a long time. I think I'm the same as Brent. The holiday period is going to bring me some time. So when I eventually do get around to it, you can find me at ipengineer.net. And I'm on Twitter at DavidJohnG.
And LSP42 is still not operational, right?
No, some other guy hijacked it and he won't give me back.
No.
So that's my sad thing for this year. Oh, yeah, and then not only that, he got himself banned as well. So now I can't get it at all. Yeah. Oh, well, that's life.
Now, maybe you could be VTAP 42.
Hey, there's an idea.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, and while David is trying to grab that handle, I'm Ivan Pipelniak, and you can find me on ipspace.net or on Twitter as @iOSHints. If you want to know more about SDN, go to sdn.ipspace.net, where you'll find all sorts of resources from presentations, videos, podcasts like this one, free webinars where free means free of commercials. Sorry, I have to charge for them. Books, workshops, all sorts of resources you need to get started on your SDN journey. You want to hear more podcasts? Go to podcast.ipspace.net, where you'll get the list of the previous 50 or so episodes. And finally, keep in mind, we talk about software and we call all this software defined, but in reality, it all runs on hardware.